It's Friday, December 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, civilian evacuations begin in eastern Aleppo.
It could mark really a sea change in the oil market going into 2017. It's definitely one to watch, I think.
Oil prices and inventories move in opposite directions. Also ahead, the politics of satire in the United States, and the movie award season is heating up. It's all on today's International Edition. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad on Thursday said history would be made with what he referred to as the liberation of Aleppo in a video posted to his official Twitter account. Assad likened his government's recapture of Aleppo to other historical events, including the fall of the Soviet Union, and said history would be permanently altered. A new three-day ceasefire is to permit the evacuation of civilians and wounded. However, several issues remain concerning, and Secretary of State John Kerry.
We remain deeply concerned as well that we are hearing reports of Syrian men between the ages of 18 and 40 who have apparently been detained or conscripted into military service when trying to pass through government checkpoints, and that some who of these actually went missing days or even weeks ago, and we still don't have families, don't have their loved ones, don't have accountability for what has happened to them. Obviously, these actions are despicable, and they're contrary to the laws of war and to basic human decency.
Ambulances and government buses began evacuating wounded and other civilians from the last rebel-held areas of Aleppo, moving out of besieged eastern Aleppo through government-held territory and into another rebel-held part of the province. International Edition host Sarah Williams spoke with Anna Nelson. She's the chief spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross in the United States and Canada about the operation.
Well, yeah, the evacuation started actually around 1 a.m. Washington time this morning, and a few hours later, 10 Syrian Arab Red Crescent ambulances were able to cross through. So far, what I'm hearing from my colleagues on the ground is that around 26 wounded and nearly 1,000 others, the majority of them civilian, have been evacuated and are being transferred to western rural Aleppo. And I'm getting word that the second phase of the evacuation is now underway.
And what will that second phase be?
My understanding is that the International Committee of the Red Cross staff and the Syrian Arab Red Crescent volunteers that are on the ground, there's about 100 volunteers and about a dozen ICRC staff, are hoping to evacuate 200 to 250 wounded and sick. Exact numbers are hard to confirm. We're also evaluating what the situation with the healthcare structures are like. What I had heard from our colleagues is that, frankly, they've never seen such levels of suffering and destruction before. And this is coming from people who have been in the field for a very long time and who have seen have been witness to conflicts in many places. So that's quite something.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there enough medical care there at the moment, you know, on the ground? Are there enough, say, doctors or nurses being able to help with this evacuation?
And my understanding is that there were about 20 buses involved, again, around 100 volunteers and a dozen ICRC staff. I think, you know, because we hadn't had access to the area, it was hard to know exactly what the needs were. So that's what they're in the process of evaluating and clearly making those wounded and sick patients the priority. So I think it's going to be a question of time. But what we do know is that, you know, fuel has been running short for quite a while now. It's cold. It's the middle of winter there. You know, the healthcare situation, you know, we assume is essentially non-existent in the east. We know that there were only two health structures partially working without medicine and very limited capacity. So I think we can assume that what existed inside eastern Aleppo was very alarming by means of medical services. And now, the priority will be to get the sick and wounded out.
And where will they be going?
So they're being taken to rural Aleppo near and to Idlib province by bus and by ambulance.
Anna Nelson, chief spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross in the United States and Canada. Time now for us to look at the social media world with International Edition's Michael Lippin. And Michael, we talked so much about this during the election and following the election of Donald Trump. Today's spotlight appears to be on the U.S. Electoral College. Why is that?
Hi, Jim. That's right. Well, Facebook has the Electoral College as one of the top trending topics today. For the benefit of our listeners, the Electoral College is a group of 538 electors who meet about a month after every U.S. presidential election to formally elect the president who won a majority of the Electoral College votes allocated to all the states plus D.C. So when the electors meet next Monday, they're usually expected to vote the way the people in their states voted. So if Trump, a Republican, won the most votes in Florida, all of Florida's Electoral College Republican electors would cast their votes for Trump. But we're not so sure this time. Because some commentators are speculating that some Republican electors may not vote for Trump because quite a few Republicans generally opposed him throughout the campaign. And in recent weeks, some Democratic members of the Electoral College have called on U.S. authorities to brief them on intelligence reports that Russia tried to interfere in the election to the benefit of Trump. So today, those calls got a boost from a Democratic member of Congress, Don Beyer, who posted a Facebook message today calling for Monday's Electoral College vote to actually be delayed until the electors have been given access to that intelligence.
Wow, an amazing development if that would happen. What kind of response has he had to the idea?
It'll be really unusual. But one critic of that call is Kyle Vardo-Colvard. He responded to Beyer on Facebook saying, "This is just another stall tactic, just another way to try to destroy the credibility of someone who won fair and square." One supporter of Beyer, who agrees with the call for a delay, had this to say, "I'm amazed at how many people are unfazed by the fact that a foreign government played a role in our election. I can only imagine the frenzy that Republicans would have engaged in if Hillary Clinton had won, and there were even a hint that Putin tried to make that happen."
Okay, well, very quickly, what else have you seen trending today?
Well, another story about Trump, and it's not flattering to Trump, actually. Vanity Fair magazine writer Tina Nguyen wrote a very critical review of the Trump Grill, which is a restaurant in Trump Tower, and that article was published today. The review's headline says, "Trump Grill could be the worst restaurant in America." Quite something. It seems like Donald Trump noticed because he sent out this tweet today. "Has anyone looked at the really poor numbers of Vanity Fair magazine? Way down, big trouble, dead." Then Trump said this about Graydon Carter, the magazine's chief editor. "He has no talent, will be out." We'll see.
All right. Well, one person with a lot of talent is at @Michael_Lippin. Michael Lippin, thank you so much. I'm out there as well on Twitter at VOA Stevenson. Follow our International Edition stream too at @VOA_IE. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia: China boosts defenses on artificial islands. Post-impeachment South Korean presidential race begins. Dozens of Afghans return home after being deported from Germany. The United Nations and Asia Development Bank are upbeat over Asia economic outlook. After 6 months in office, Duterte opinion rating is high. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the voanews.com website. We're on your mobile phone as well. Just download the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Oil prices are declining again after recently reaching about $56 a barrel. That was the highest in 18 months. The prices of crude oil went up after OPEC reached a deal with oil-producing countries outside the cartel to jointly reduce output to curb global oversupply. The price dipped this week amid reports of a jump in crude inventories in the United States. And there are concerns an oil glut and a stronger dollar may lead to another drop in crude oil prices. Slotika Hoke has more as VOA discussed the global oil situation with Secretary General of OPEC, Mohamed Sanusi Barkindo.
The price of crude oil dipped again Wednesday after the Federal Reserve raised a key interest rate by 0.25%, citing the strengthening economy. The dollar rose, making oil more expensive for countries using other currencies. OPEC Secretary General Mohamed Barkindo told VOA that cartel members, as well as non-members, have been struggling in recent years.
Prices have crashed by as much as 80%. Companies have folded up in hundreds as a result of that. Investments in the industry have also contracted severely, going to the third consecutive year now.
The OPEC official says in 2015, investment contracted by nearly 26% globally, and this year it's expected to contract by nearly 22%. He says the situation is harmful not only to the oil industry, but also to the global community, because it is threatening future supplies.
Having three consecutive years of not slowdown, but real contraction in investments as a result of the low oil prices we have seen, it's detrimental to the global economy. And hence the lead taken by OPEC together with our partners from non-OPEC member countries to restore stability to this market.
Top oil exporter Saudi Arabia, an OPEC member, agreed on November 30th to cut around 486,000 barrels per day to reduce the oversupply that has dogged markets for 2 years. On Saturday, producers from outside OPEC, led by Russia, agreed to reduce output by 558,000 barrels per day, the largest contribution of cuts by non-OPEC members ever. Analysts say a limit in production could help boost the oil industry next year.
It could mark really a sea change in the oil market going into 2017. It's definitely one to watch, I think. But as ever with these OPEC and non-OPEC nations, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So let's not get our party hats on too soon.
OPEC Secretary General Barkindo said the oil industry moves in cycles of boom and bust. But out of all the cycles so far, the current one that started in November 2014 has been the most severe. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
The earliest known satirical, or rather political satire, goes back more than 2,000 years in Greece. Modern satire gained popularity in the 1700s as cartoons drawn by American colonists who were fighting for independence from British rule became popular, and while people can now be imprisoned or even put to death for political satire in some countries, it's protected in the United States as freedom of speech by First Amendment to the Constitution. VOA's Deborah Block looks at political satire prominent on late-night television shows, with jokes targeting politicians, including American presidents.
What is your biggest concern this election?
Oh, that's simple. You are my biggest concern. Next question, please.
Politicians are fair game for the late night TV shows in the United States, as Jimmy Fallon, host of The Tonight Show, does his impersonation of President-elect Donald Trump.
Donald Trump was the target of more jokes in his presidential campaign than anybody in any other presidential campaign.
Robert Lichter collaborated on a book about late night television shows called Politics is a Joke: How TV Comedians Are Remaking Political Life. Lichter thinks while some late-night hosts have been tough on certain presidents, they have been softer on President Barack Obama.
You have to be wary of seeming racist by going after the first black American president.
President Obama said that Congress needs to raise the debt ceiling because there aren't any other, quote, rabbits in our hat. Plus, they're still tired from their last trick where they made thousands of jobs disappear.
Political satire became more visible on television starting in the 1960s. But it was Saturday Night Live, which debuted in 1975, that changed the way a president could be portrayed on TV. It began with comedian Chevy Chase, who became known for his impersonation of a bumbling president, Gerald Ford.
Saturday Night Live brought presidential parodies into the mix of political humor.
Then Jay Leno, host of The Tonight Show for 17 years, from 1992 to 2009, broadened the appeal of political satire on the late night shows. Other show hosts followed his lead.
President Obama has stopped using the word Obamacare in his speeches. He now calls it the Affordable Care Act. See, that's not a good sign. when even Obama is trying to distance himself from Obamacare.
In the 1990s, political satire made late-night shows a place where people could expect to be entertained and hear the juicy stuff about politicians. On Saturday Night Live, Daryl Hammond pretended to be President Bill Clinton after his acquittal of perjury and obstruction of justice.
I am bulletproof.
In the 1990s, comedians start to go after scandals, private lives, sex, drinking, really subjects that were taboo earlier in television.
Politicians also came to realize that appearing on these shows was good publicity and getting their views heard. Hillary Clinton plays this bartender.
You're a politician. Yes, yes. And how about you?
Well, I'm just an ordinary citizen who believes the Keystone Pipeline will destroy our environment.
They soon discovered that they could actually go on these shows and show that they were regular guys. They could laugh at themselves.
Donald Trump appeared on The Tonight Show.
Me interviewing me, that's what I call a great idea.
Of course it's a great idea. We thought of it.
And on Saturday Night Live, twice, including November last year. In recent weeks, however, Trump has been critical of his depiction on that show, tweeting that actor Alec Baldwin's portrayal can't get any worse.
A plan. Very secret.
He also called the award-winning show not funny, unwatchable, and totally biased. But for better or worse, political satire is here to stay. And Lichter thinks that in this age of political negativity, it is needed more than ever to make people laugh. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
And if you have the opportunity, check out the video to that story. It's on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. The Screen Actors Guild Award nominations have been announced in Los Angeles, and as International Edition's David Byrd tells us, the New England drama Manchester by the Sea led the nominations with 4.
Kenneth Lonergan's New England drama Manchester by the Sea has the most SAG nominations, including Best Ensemble Cast, Best Actor for Casey Affleck, and Best Supporting Performances for Michelle Williams and Lucas Hedges.
Well,
he doesn't want to be my guardian, for Christ's sake.
He's got a house full. We're trying to lose some kids at this point.
No, yeah. We're trying to work out the logistics,
we're
so I don't know.
Pretty good, but
Jesus Christ, you want to stop?
You've always got a sofa for him,
George,
anytime he wants.
George.
You know that, right?
That's all right. I know
he's welcome anytime.
I understand. I know. Thank you.
The coming-of-age drama Moonlight and August Wilson's Fences, starring Denzel Washington and Viola Davis, scored 3 nominations each. The ensemble musical La La Land earned 2 nominations for actors Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone.
I got a call back.
What? Come on. For what?
For a TV show. The one that I was telling you about earlier.
The Dangerous Minds meets the OC?
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's
really
incredible.
Exciting. I feel like I said negative stuff about it before.
What?
It's like Rebel Without a Cause, sort of.
I got the bullets.
Yes.
SAG-AFTRA President Gabrielle Carteris said she had no favorites Wednesday, but agreed that every one of this year's nominees gave outstanding performances.
And every time I heard them go, you know, the name for it, I stood there with Common going, yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought that was wonderful as he stood up there. It reflected exactly how I felt. It was pleasantly happy for everybody.
The awards are given by actors to actors, with more than 100,000 votes cast each year. The award's executive producer, Kathy Connell, said that the award is doubly special because it comes from actors' peers.
You know, it's really special because they know it's coming from their peers. It's a true peer award. It's an acknowledgement that people understand your work and appreciate your work in a very personal way. And they get to vote for each other, and they get to vote for their friends, and they get to salute people that they admire.
Do you know where you are?
I'm in a dream.
You're in my dream. I designed every part of this place. It's not a theme park, but an entire world.
In the television category, HBO's fantasy drama Game of Thrones and sci-fi thriller Westworld will compete against the final season of the British period drama Downton Abbey, the Netflix series The Crown, and Netflix's sci-fi mystery Stranger Things. The best television comedy nominees include the CBS sitcom The Big Bang Theory, ABC's Modern Family and Black-ish, Netflix's Orange is the New Black, and HBO's Veep. The Screen Actors Guild Awards, which are often predictors of Academy Award success, will be announced January 29th in a ceremony and live broadcast. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at our website, voanews.com. Find us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. Come back when you're able to. We'll be waiting for you. Have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the recent Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, ministerial meeting, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry reaffirmed that we advance the security and prosperity of our citizens when we advance the timeless principles that are at the heart of the OSCE. These principles include democratic governance and the rule of law, anti-corruption, respect for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of every state, the dignity of each individual, and an unflinching stand against anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim, anti-Christian bigotry and intolerance of any kind. The ongoing conflict in eastern Ukraine and Russian occupation of Crimea are of particular concern. It is in the interest of all to end the suffering and the stalemate, and that is why the United States continues to support France and Germany in their efforts as mediators within the Normandy format. The United States strongly backs a trilateral contact group of the OSCE, Ukraine, and Russia, and renews its call for the full implementation of the Minsk agreements. At the same time, Russia's ongoing aggression in eastern Ukraine and occupation of Crimea must not obscure the longer-term challenge that Ukraine is tackling, the task of building a healthy democracy. And the fight against corruption and for reform is what the people of Ukraine rightly recognize as the decisive battlefield. Their determination to live in a democratic society governed by the rule of law, said Secretary Kerry, demands our support. There are other conflicts in the OSCE that still fester, including between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and in Moldova and Georgia. In too many places in the OSCE region, there has been a rise of authoritarian thinking accompanied by backsliding on human rights, restrictions on independent media, a spike in acts of intolerance and hate crimes. Bigotry, repression, and the silencing of dissent cannot become the new normal for any of us, said Secretary Kerry. Every chip away at the fundamentals of freedom is actually an ugly building block in the road to tyranny. A free press, religious liberty, political openness, transparency in governance, and a flourishing civil society are the signs of a thriving nation. When people and institutions are denied these rights, the OSCE will continue to speak out.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.